you a message.
You may proceed.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'm Edward Rayleigh here from Rayleigh and Rayleigh on behalf of Talmadge Ricks. His appeal from his conviction for strangulation in the Circuit Court of South County. He was also convicted on the same day, which was in October of 2013, for assault and battery, or felonious assault and battery, third or subsequent offense. We obviously stipulate that he was guilty of that crime. As the court's aware, the strangulation statute is a very new statute, it's very limited case law on that statute. In my brief, I compared, as is done in the annotation to the statute in the Code of Virginia, the term bodily injury as defined by the case law relating to the malicious wounding and malicious maiming statute for the court. Opine that the term bodily injury should hold its everyday ordinary meaning throughout the entire statutory scheme. I would argue the same. There's obviously case law with respect to malicious wounding that says there's no, it's not necessary that there be any breaking of the skin, wounding, or otherwise visible injury to have a malicious wounding. The court's well aware of the malicious wounding statute is a specific intent statute, and if you have intent to maim, disfigure, disable, or kill, obviously your injury, whether or not there's obvious wounding, is going to be fairly substantial to be found guilty of that crime, as opposed to assault and battery, which is a lesser included.
Let me ask you this question, counsel. If you have the intent to commit malicious wounding, but you only commit a very slight battery, is that an assault and battery, or is that something else?
I think under the current case law, it's technically a malicious wounding. In practicality, probably in circuit courts of Virginia, it's probably going to be an unlawful wounding or assault and battery. But to answer your question, technically, it's a malicious wounding, in my opinion.
No matter how slight the injury is. Then you're basically saying that bodily injury means any bodily injury of any kind, even what would constitute no more than assault and battery in most circumstances.
That could be arguably correct by the case law and by the Commonwealth's argument in this case. Again, practically speaking, if there's a wounding that occurs with the intent...
Let's get wounding out of there. Let's get the wounding out. Let's call it a bodily injury, at least, okay?
Okay.
Because a wounding, I think, is a wounding, and I think we're probably on the same page. But I'm talking about a very slight... In other words, could you commit a malicious wounding with a pillow?
You could not, Your Honor.
You may have every intent to maim the person, but you just can't do it. You can't get enough of an injury to commit a malicious wounding, right?
That's right.
It might be an assault and battery.
Could be. Could be an assault, or could be a battery, and perhaps an assault, but I don't think it could be an malicious wounding by any stretch or wounding. The facts in the instant case are that this lady, by her own testimony, suffered a red mark to her neck. She also complained that she couldn't speak very well for 2 or 3 days. There was limited testimony or no testimony as to whether or not that occurred by this gentleman's unwanted touching to her. In a personal injury case, it probably would have required expert testimony to show that her speech problems or her representation that she had problems speaking were caused by his very limited touching of her by her own admission. It's my position that she had suffered a faint red mark to her face. She did not seek any medical treatment.
Suppose it was a blue and red mark to her face. Are you saying that some bruises or injuries, there are other bruises or not?
They're very factually driven. I'm saying in this case that the police officer, if the mark was so faint, didn't even take a picture of it, nor did the victim seek any medical treatment. She said that she took some pain medication at some point, but couldn't even remember what it was. So the police officer didn't find the mark on her neck sufficient to take pictures of it, nor did she seek medical treatment or through the emergency room, rescue squad, or otherwise.
As far back as Bryant, we've said that bodily injury comprehends any bodily hurt whatsoever. So So why wouldn't even the slightest red mark on her neck attributed to his hands around her neck constitute a bodily injury?
Well, Your Honor, the statute, even using that definition of bodily injury, also requires him to impede the blood circulation or respiration by knowingly, intentionally, and unlawfully applying pressure to the neck. She did testify that she couldn't breathe for just a very few seconds. I don't know if that was caused by pressure to the neck, but it also requires an injury. And while the law may be that it's any injury whatsoever, I don't know that we've shown an injury here. We've shown a discoloration on her neck that wasn't even worth taking a picture of, so I don't know that that constitutes a bodily injury. I don't know that that wasn't from her being nervous or from anything else. I don't know that Mr. Ricks caused that. It wasn't in the record, and I don't know that it was an injury even under that standard.
Where did it come from? Just a coincidence? She walked away with a bruise around her neck, and she had just been strangled, but we don't know where it came from.
Your Honor, I don't know that it came from a strangulation. It could have come from the assault and battery the gentleman was convicted of on the same day.
But could a rational fact finder disagree with that and say, no, that's in fact where it came from? He grabbed her around the neck, and that's where it was. She couldn't breathe, and she was unable to talk for a few days.
I think the inference could be drawn, but it's certainly conceivable that he came from the assault and battery and not from an impediment to her breathing or respiration.
Well, it's possible a jury could have acquitted, but are we prepared to say a jury is acting irrationally to not acquit in this situation? Or if a trial judge, bench trial?
That's a question. I assume for a jury or trial judge in this situation, using the plain meaning of the word, as is my understanding of the law, my argument is that there wasn't a bodily injury, as it was just a faint red mark. Accordingly, I would ask the court to vacate the decision of the circuit court and dismiss the indictment. No more questions. I will reserve the balance of my time.
All right.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Rosemary Bourne on behalf of the appellee of the Commonwealth of Virginia. First of all, I would take issue with regard to the factual argument that there is only a faint red mark. The judge here, in his findings, specifically found that there was a bruise in addition. And the question was asked, did you have any injuries as a result of the strangulation and being hit with the belt? And she said, I had a bruise around my neck. But she was also asked, where were you hit by the belt? And she said, on her side. So the reasonable inference, the only reasonable inference that the judge, in fact, reached in this case, which is a factual finding that the court made, which is not plainly wrong, is that the bruise, which she characterized as a bruise around her neck, occurred from the strangulation, and that the belt being hit with a belt occurred on her side. So certainly, what is a bodily injury? And that, of course, is what the question is today. And it's not defined except that since Bryant and Johnson, it is any bodily hurt whatsoever. And, of course, a bruise, therefore, would constitute a bodily injury under that definition.
There wasn't any medical testimony about what a bruise is, was there?
There was no medical testimony as to what a bruise is, but, I mean, the...
I'm not suggesting there has to be. What I'm suggesting is it sufficient in the common understanding of the prior fact that a bruise actually involves some kind of capillary damage that actually is an injury?
I certainly would say so, and of course the Court of Appeals has had the chance to address this on numerous occasions. This court hasn't specifically had the opportunity to delve down too far into bodily injury since Bryant, since and Johnson. But the Court of Appeals has certainly talked about there needs to be no break of the skin, that soft tissue injuries such as bruises are sufficient to show bodily injury.
The victim characterized it as a bruise. The judge characterized it as a bruise. There wasn't a doctor, but your position is it's sufficient.
Well, certainly the victim knows what her injuries are, and I would argue that there doesn't need to be medical testimony. A bruise is a term that...
Well, having handled any number of personal injury cases in private practice, there is a difference between a red mark on your arm or wherever you are caused by your thumb and pressure. If it stays there after a while, that's because of capillary damage. It's actually a medical term. It's called ecchymosis, and that is an injury without question. So what I'm asking you is, absent medical testimony as to what this is, can a judge or a victim characterize what it is?
Well, I would certainly argue that they can, because a bruise is a term that's used commonly in everyday language. And
this one had some duration to it. As a result, it's fair game for an ordinary observer to say, yeah, that's a bruise. I mean, I know a mark that lasts for a while is a bruise.
But these issues are...
I'm not contesting it with you. It's actually a friendly question.
Okay. Well, I guess what I would say, Your Honor, is that, I agree with that. But, of course, these are issues that go to the weight of the evidence,
right,
and not to the sufficiency of the evidence. And when we talk about residual effects and all of these additional requirements that the Court of Appeals has put in to this, those issues should more fairly go to the weight of the evidence. And different ways that you can prove that there is an injury. And one way that you can prove that there is an injury is from the victim testifying herself, I had a bruise, I couldn't talk for several days.
Well, but let's go to that second part. Why isn't that sufficient in and of itself?
It is.
Okay.
I agree with you, it is. Moreover, she said she took pain medication. All of these things are cumulative evidence, if you will, that she had an injury. And, of course, these words have their everyday meaning. And here is any hurt or damage. If you look in the dictionary, that's the definition of a bodily injury. And she testified she had to take pain medication, and that she had bruises and red marks, which was corroborated by the police officer. So under these circumstances, I would argue that there was a reasonable inference that she suffered a bodily injury, and she certainly testified to that. Unless the court has any further questions for me, I would just ask that you affirm.
All right. You have a very generous 7 minutes and 23 seconds left for rebuttal.
I would just reiterate that...
Why don't we start where she just left off? Forget the bruise business for just a moment. Isn't the fact that this person lost her voice for a period of time and took pain medication for relief sufficient enough in and of itself to establish a bodily injury?
Your Honor, I agree with the point that establishes a bodily injury, maybe the pain medication. There was also testimony that she was hit with a belt thrown down on the bed, which I assume was encompassed in the assault and battery conviction. With respect to that...
Wasn't the evidence that the belt hit her side?
Yes, sir.
Right, so it's nothing to do with the neck.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Right. So I don't know how you lose your voice by being hit with a belt on the side. As difficult an injury as that might be, I don't know that it causes you to lose your voice for several days.
No, certainly, and I agree. I'm just saying that the inference can certainly, it's possible to draw the inference that someone choking you could create a soreness in your neck. Also believe that it was in the record that the defendant testified that he hit the woman somewhere in the neck area with his elbow region, and that would be different from strangulation, but it would constitute a battery, and her soreness could have come from that. There was very limited or no evidence in the record.
Could have come from, and the trial judges or the finder of fact having the ability to make the conclusion beyond a reasonable doubt are two different standards. we look at the finder of fact, we say, is there evidence from which the finder of fact could have made this conclusion? Reasonably.
Yes, sir.
It's not that there might have been something else that could have caused it. This business about reasonable hypothesis of innocence is only another way of saying beyond a reasonable doubt. So we go back to the same standard. And the same standard on review, on this record, could the trier of fact have made that finding reasonably? And it seems to me that's the burden you're up against. That we have a finding. Was it unreasonable?
Well, I'll leave that to the court, Your Honor.
All right.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. Call the next case.